Hello and welcome to another edition of the Moving Iron Podcast. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for almost 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Axon was started almost 100 years ago out of a passion for keeping agriculture moving. It's that same passion that drives them today. With a vision for a better experience for both farmer and dealer, they set out to create a better way to move more iron. When you partner with Axon, you get immediate access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. Axon carries all major brands and sizes of tires, wheels, and tracks. From custom colors and sizes to fully customized wheels, you can have the solution for virtually any problem today's farmer is trying to solve. To find more or become an Axon dealer, please visit axontire.com. Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find us here, Moving Iron. Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Marcus with Chip Nillinger. This edition of the Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by Axon Tire, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. For more information, go to axontire.com. And Tractor Zoom, delivering insights. If you're looking to track what's going on in the auction marketplace, check out Tractor Zoom. They have 500 independent auction agencies that report to them what the auction results look like. It's a great place to see trend lines develop, and it's a great place to see what's going on in the auction marketplace. So if you're interested in doing that, go to Tractor Zoom, go to Iron Comps, and you will get a discount if you use Moving Iron at checkout. So make sure you check that out. Chip is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Chip is nice enough to come on once a week to talk about what's going on in the marketplace. And you know, Chip, it looks like the weather market is here, and it's not going anywhere, and the market is looking at some stuff, and I shake my head at what they're doing, but you know, when you got computers running the thing, there's an algorithm, and that's what it spits out. So, you know, yesterday on Thursday, we had a big sell-off, had a big run-up the day before. So, I guess, make some sense of what's going on in the marketplace right now, Chip.
Yeah, well, I'll try. It's you could probably boil it down to what you said. It is still a weather market, and, I mean, it's a long-running weather market now. I was telling somebody the other day, I'm like, this is – usually you have a weather market, it's like 2-3 weeks and it's either a problem or it's not. And, you know, I think you add on the fact that we've been trading weather in South America as well. And, right. You know, we're multiple months into this, but it really is getting to crunch time here for the crops in the United States, particularly the Western Corn Belt. And obviously there's a high pressure system set up over the Northern Plains. It's got temperatures up, you know, to and above 100 degrees. That's going to be 5-6-7 day occurrence. And now the weather models are kind of in disagreement here as to what happens as we get into August. And one of the weather models yesterday, or at least in the overnight, night before last, added a little bit of rain and moved the high pressure ridge to the southwest. So that would cool things back down and allow for some at least chances of rain in some of the hottest, driest areas. The other weather model, however, stays pretty hot and pretty dry, clear through the first portion of August. So a lot of uncertainty there. And you mentioned the algos. You know, you wake up in the morning, these weather models, like the European weather model, runs twice a day, once in the overnight, once in the late afternoon. And you wake up, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, you look at beans are down 35, you know, corn's down 15. And these algos are programmed to, as that weather model comes out, trade based on, you know, changes in that forecast. And it certainly did get a little bit wetter. But the problem is that, you know, you see a lot of back and forth as these weather models run and kind of resolve, you know, multiple days. They're going out 2+ weeks on this forecast. So there is some variance in these models from run to run. And it just so happened yesterday that, you know, the funds decided it's going to, weather's going to be perfect and the Eastern Corn Belt's going to carry us. And we've got this big crop coming and sold it pretty hard. And the reality is, you know, it's less than certain out there. So we've got everybody's in the Western Corn Belt saying, hey, it's 105 degrees and beans are down 48 cents. What is going on here? But that's just the perceived day-to-day changes in those forecasts. And it's not like they added, you know, crop-saving rains to every state west of the Mississippi. I mean, it's just a slight better chance of rain and a little bit cooler. So that just goes to show you how these just tiny little changes in this forecast, which, by the way, aren't always super accurate, just tiny little changes in those weather model runs can have pretty dramatic, volatility added to our market. So the way I read it today, Friday, right now in the overnights, a little bit lower. I think that there probably won't be much of it doesn't matter. You know, I don't think it matters if corn's up 12, down 12 today. I think what matters is you come in, Sunday night and Monday. And if those 2 week forecasts still have hot and dry weather, they're going to continue to add some weather premium. It's not like we've got a lot of time left on the clock here. You know, we're kind of running out of time, and it's getting to be critical time frame for these crops.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of critical time for crops, let's talk about the wheat market. What's going on there? All right. So we have, the wheat harvest is in full bore, obviously. You know, as you go in my neck of the woods, it's moved up to northern Nebraska. A lot of custom cutters, from what I understand, are skipping over what they've got in Nebraska and heading straight up to Montana because of what they see happening with the spring wheat crop up there. Obviously, with the drought situation that you have, there's going to be, the wheat's kind of finished out, so it's under very much distress, and it might be only a 6 or 7 foot tall plant, but 7 foot tall plant, 6 or 7 inches tall, and as you need to go get that cut for insurance reasons, what have you. But a lot of guys are moving that way right now, and I guess that is that's a massive problem up there with the drought situation that we see there. You see, the French crop has got dipped again in rating, and you start looking at the Russian wheat supply and their exports and stuff like that. So I guess you start compiling all this stuff onto the top of wheat. Looks like there could be some pretty big moves in wheat over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, there could be. And it's you hit the nail on the head. I think that's a good overview. Generally speaking, the world stocks are shrinking. If you go back a couple of weeks to our July crop report from the USDA, they surprisingly cut our carryout, more than expected, down towards the bottom end of expectations. You mentioned the spring wheat problems in the Northern Plains, Canada. Minneapolis wheat has had a little bit of a setback here, but it probably is just a setback in a further bull market. It's up a little bit pretty nicely here on the highs, up 5.5 now in the overnight. So the funds in general have been short wheat, not the Minneapolis. They're long the Minneapolis now, but Kansas City, Chicago wheat, they've been short. And now you're throwing some friendly fundamentals on with the shrinking wheat crops in parts of Europe and Russia and our spring wheat problems here in Canada. And there's probably some ammunition for the funds to start building a long position. The good news is they came into this thing net short. And so they're probably now out of that short. They're probably now starting to build some long positions, and things look good. And I think as you take the whole world, sometimes we get focused on corn and wheat to a lesser extent, but there's a lot of other alternative competitive feed grains that are grown across the world. Barley, sorghum, oats, stuff like this. And this Canadian and Northern Plains drought is going to decimate a lot of those crops, including spring wheat. And so it all just goes in the bucket of feed grains for the world, right? If we don't have wheat, we'll feed corn. If we're, short on corn, we'll feed wheat. We'll feed oats. We'll feed barley. And that's this total supply of feed grains is definitely on its way lower, not higher. And so that doesn't mean you're going to go straight up. But I think what it means is that any breaks going forward the next several months in wheat, in corn, in Minneapolis spring wheat are going to be well supported. And, you don't need much of an additional bullish story to probably get the funds, wanting to, build a pretty decent long position. I did a little study yesterday in Minneapolis wheat. I'm, admittedly not a specialist in Minneapolis wheat. It's a little bit of a, not a specialty crop, but it's certainly not a lot of acreage. And I looked at a long-term chart. You look at wheat, you know, you're over $9. You're like, oh, is this thing getting a little bit extended? And there's plenty of evidence that if this crop is as short as what it looks like it might be in the Northern Plains and Canada, that you could maybe extend this up into the $10, $11 range. Of course, if you go back like 15, 20 years, we remember we literally almost ran out of spring wheat. We spent some time north of $20. I'm not going to be on record predicting that, but you could certainly tack another dollar or two on this Minneapolis wheat without much of a problem and get that up into the $10, $11 range. You know, the problem with that is it's a protein issue, right? And
right.
Minneapolis wheat's the highest protein content out there, and that gets everyone scrambling for protein. So it just sets off kind of a chain of events that leads to strong demand, and you know, we're probably again have more upside potential than downside. And I think any breaks over the coming weeks and months probably pretty well supported in not only wheat but corn as well. Even if we end up and luck out of this and have a close to a trend line corn yield, I don't know that the bottom has to fall out, because we're probably just starting in now when you flip the calendar to August to some better exports. I mean, normally that's when the world export market kind of comes to the United States, and I don't know why this year is going to be any different. We're going to be one of the only places to get corn or beans, and you know, wheat demand has picked up a little bit, and so that's a good environment for higher prices, is increasing demand and shrinking stocks. You know, that's kind of econ 101.
Right. All right, so let's talk about Brazil for just a little bit here, and they had another frost event come through this week. I don't know if this, how many this is now, three or four or whatever this is that they've had happen, but it's really the market has really just kind of ignored that fact, as many frost events as you've seen down there. So I guess talk about what you see happening there, and then what's that overall effect? Because I mean, there's nothing in the news, nothing short of in the news that says anything other than, well, you know, one more time the Brazilian corn crop is going to be, you know, less than what we thought it was going to be. So I guess talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that goes into this whole world feed grain stocks as well. And that's kind of a dynamic issue. You know, they had four, if not five, frosts on that crop. They've just thrown everything, you know, huge drought. If you remember, they started that process, I don't know where they were at, 120, 125 million ton crop potential. That would have meant they would have exported on the world market a big chunk, you know, 30 million tons, not a small amount. Now you have, you know, the last time I've seen any private estimates, they're in the 85, you know, million metric ton range. Yeah. And shrinking. And you know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. You know, you got ADMs, Cargills of the world, washing out of contracts because they're not going to have enough supply to get to fulfill the export commitments that they had. And so all that speaks to is, you know, normally when the United States starts taking over on demand here in August, September, all the way through harvest and winter, that Brazil's not going to be there to have any cushion for exportable supplies. They might have a little bit, but they're going to end up using a lot of that crop domestically. And that just means we have a more competitive situation to export more. So, and it remains to be seen what that crop size is. I mean, it's possible it could end up in the, you know, closer to 80 than 85 million. And it's a big deal. And in a time where the world demand is so strong and China's been such a strong buyer, it could lead to real explosive moves here down the road. And obviously that's going to be dependent upon what our crop size is right here on corn and beans and you know, what the ultimate spring wheat crop is. But it's been a long time that we've talked about this, because there's been such a big supply, particularly of wheat in the world. And now it's, you know, over the last two or three years, we've slowly started to draw these stocks down, and that leads to, you know, obviously some upside price risk as you go. And, you know, the outside markets are always part of that. The dollar's kind of been fluctuating here, and stock market's shown a little bit of volatility. But at the heart of it, we're in a shrinking corn and feed grain stock situation across the world with stable to rising demand. And that's, you know, it's got the makings for higher prices. Great for producers, not very good for end users. And, you know, until South America, now they are waiting in the wings here. If they can get a little bit of rain and get healed up from this drought, they're going to plant a ton of acres this winter or this fall, you know, because their currency is still favorable for them. So until February, March, April, where they have new crop supplies of their fall planted, or I should say their spring planted, our fall and winter planted crops down there, the United States is in the driver's seat as far as, you know, being able to kind of be the exporter to the world right now.
Yep. All right, let's jump down and talk about what's going on in the cattle complex. Looks like box beef prices have you know, risen again. That overall cold storage report came out, and they're drawing down those stocks for what we've seen in the past. Also, there's a fair amount of cattle getting liquidated right now, especially in the northern plains. When you look at what's going on in North and South Dakota, Montana, you know, all through that area where the drought's so strong. What's your expectations for the beef market over the next 5 or 6 days here as you look at the marketplace?
Yeah, we really have struggled. It's like a bad broken record here as far as cash cattle. I mean, we really have been stuck in this 119 to 121 range on cash cattle for months now. And I think part of the problem is, you mentioned there's been, I don't know if it's record, but it's one of the highest ever of the last 3 or 4 months here, cow slaughter numbers in history. So that puts more beef on the market. I think that's been something that's held us back a little bit and probably caused some of the box beef weakness that we've seen. Should be coming kind of to the end of that. Now, longer term, because of the drought and the displacement of cows and, you know, way higher than average cow slaughter, that should mean on the back end of this, very good things out, you know, 6 months to a year plus, right? It's going to tighten everything up. We're going to see likely higher cattle prices. We're going to see likely higher feeder cattle prices with way smaller cow numbers. But the problem is getting, you know, from here to there. And mm-hmm. It's not like it's a disaster right now, but the box beef and I should say the cash cattle market has been a little bit disappointing. It's just been stuck in the mud. Still large packer margins. I don't think that lasts forever, though. We should be kind of coming towards the bottom end of seeing these numbers shrink. In fact, there's a cattle on feed report this afternoon after the close. It is expected to see these numbers start shrinking again. You mentioned the cold storage report, and it's friendly. I glanced at it. These are kind of a volatile reports, but you're looking at, you know, total beef stocks, 398 million pounds versus 428 a year ago. So we're drawing these down. 398 be the second lowest number we've had in the last 5 years. Pork stocks are way down as well. I'm not saying that was wildly bullish, but, you know, the demand's been pretty good, even, you know, kind of coming out of COVID, and there's been some concern that maybe it's temporary, and there are some places that are starting to maybe tighten things down a little bit again. And bottom line is, even with bigger production, we're not building beef stocks. That's a good thing. I think that bodes well longer term, but in the short run, we're probably still kind of stuck in the mud here, you know, in this 120-ish range on cash cattle, unfortunately, for the foreseeable future. I say unfortunately, I mean, it could be a lot worse. At least it's we're limping along, but we certainly haven't seen the rally that a lot of producers had hoped for to get closer to 130 by this point in time, and that's been a slow grind on this cash market.
Yep. All right, so cash hogs have, well, the hog market anyways, has slipped a little bit again for yesterday, and it's been slipping here kind of throughout the week. So what interesting tidbit here, so through Thursday, there were 28,000 more hogs slaughtered than the week before, but that's 16,000 less than this time last year. And then you start going through everything, you know, all that's there. But basically right now there's 3.9% less hog meat out there than there was a year ago. So I guess talk about what's going on there. It looks like there's less supply than what we've seen, but obviously there's a move in demand someplace that, away from the hog price.
Yeah, you know, I think there's some give and take there. You know, still at very lofty levels here, you know, right. When you're talking about August hogs at 107 and, you know, the lean index is up around 111, 112. There has been some fluctuation in cash prices. And normally, I mean, I think that's something we need to have on the radar screen. Normally, you've peaked out here by, you know, about the second week in August on cash prices. And you know, I don't know why this year would be any different. Maybe one concerning thing is that China, you know, it's like I always say, watch what they do, not what they say. They have backed off pretty dramatically on their pork imports from the United States. And, you know, they've been saying for a while that they've been rebuilding their hog herd. They have it, you know, to kind of pre-ASF levels. Whether they can keep it there, I don't think they have ASF controlled necessarily, but so the numbers do appear that they have increased in China, and they have backed off our, you know, buying our pork for the time being. Doesn't mean they won't be back in at some point in time. So I think that maybe you can probably assume that the highs are in the hog market. That doesn't mean that we're going to break dramatically, and the way the hog market's structured is always tough, right? Because you look at the, you know, it's always a balancing act or a shell game between, all right, where's the cash prices and the lean index and stuff like that. And you look at $107 August hogs, and you look at the Octobers at under 92, and the Decembers at 85, and you're like, okay, the market has a lot of that priced in. They know that usually by August, cash market peaks and you go lower in the fall. Well, we've kind of priced that in these deferreds. So I don't know that there has to be a ton of downside. I think the one thing that people are going to want to see, and it's just going to take time, is normally when you have, you know, $110 hogs, you're going to see a lot of expansion. But, you know, that has come with some $7 plus old crop corn and, you know, $5.50, $6 new crop corn. And so maybe these higher feed ingredients, higher corn prices, are going to curtail a little bit of the expansion that we'd normally see, but that's just going to take time to figure that out. Maybe the one bright spot is because of the vegetable oil issues and soy oil has led the rally in beans, it's really given us some fairly attractive meal level. So that may be the one bright spot for margins for these hog guys, is they've had a chance to, when you see, you know, $15, $16 old crop beans, you're talking $5.50 meal. Well, we've been in the 300s, you know, 340, 350. I mean, that is something that is going to help, you know, keep the feed costs a little bit in check for these hog guys, and maybe an opportunity that to secure a little more margin than normally what you'd think meal would be when beans have been, you know, $16 here recently.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of moving parts here, man. There's a million things going on between exports and drought and everything else. So folks are working on that plan, Chip. What's the best way to get a hold of you and the folks there at Blue Reef to help them through that process?
Yeah, very, very critical process, and getting more complex every day, a lot of moving parts to it. So it takes a lot of focus. But yeah, we're open to questions and talking to anyone. We're pretty low pressure. But if you have any questions, you can reach out. Best way is to just call our office at 309-550-7213, and we'd love to talk to you.
Right on. Well, Chip, thanks for being on the podcast, man.
Hey, not a problem, Casey. It's going to be interesting next week to see what this this weather does. That's what it's all about for the grain side of things.
Absolutely. A lot to pay attention to there. So I am Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Make sure you check me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's where you're going to find the latest editions of the Moving Iron Podcast. Also, go to movingironllc.com, and you'll find all the latest editions there, as well as in the entire library of the Moving Iron Podcast. Also, you'll find all the information that you'll need for the Moving Iron Summit coming up in Nashville, Tennessee. That's September 15th through the 17th. And you'll be able to have all the information there up in the navigation bar. Just click Moving Iron Podcast, and then go over to the Moving Iron Summit, and you'll find that. And you'll be able to go through there and find all the information you need to register for the event, hotel information, speaker information, agendas, so on and so forth. If you need more information, send me an email at movingironpodcast@movingironpodcast.com, and I will get back to you with the questions, answers to the questions that you have. So with that, I am Casey Seymour, Chip Nellinger. Let's go do some iron, folks. Out. You want to have a meaningful, competitive advantage to help sell more equipment. Whether you represent the sales, parts, or management department of an implement dealership, there's a surprising amount of complexity when it comes to tire, wheel, and track technology. Let Axon worry about that so you can get back to supporting your customers. Axon has leveraged years of experience to create a streamlined process that gives you a proven path to help today's grower and sell more equipment. The roots of their organization go back almost 100 years to the invention of the rubber tractor tire. Supporting agriculture is the number one driver of Axon from product development through sales and service. To find more or become an Axon dealer, head over to axontire.com.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find us here.